The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing with Part 1, The Yoga of Divine Works, on page 144, The Ascent of the Sacrifice 1. This, then, is the true relation between divine and human knowledge. It is not a separation into disparate fields, sacred and profane. That is the heart of the difference. But the character of the consciousness behind the working. All is human knowledge that proceeds from the ordinary mental consciousness, interested in the outside or upper layers of things, in process, in phenomena for their own sake, or for the sake of some surface utility, or mental or vital satisfaction of desire or of the intelligence. But the same activity of knowledge can become part of the yoga if it proceeds from the spiritual or spiritualizing consciousness which seeks and finds, in all that it surveys or penetrates, the presence of the timeless eternal and the ways of manifestation of the eternal in time. It is evident that the need of a concentration indispensable for the transition out of the ignorance may make it necessary for the seeker to gather together his energies and focus them only on that which will help the transition, and to leave aside, or subordinate for the time, all that is not directly turned towards the one object. He may find that this or that pursuit of human knowledge with which he was accustomed to deal by the surface power of the mind still brings him, by reason of this tendency, or habit, out of the depths to the surface, or down from the heights which he has climbed, or is nearing, to lower levels. These activities then may have to be intermitted, or put aside, until, secure in a higher consciousness, he is able to turn its powers on all the mental fields. Then, subjected to that light, or taken up into it, they are turned, by the transformation of his consciousness, into a province of the spiritual and divine. All that cannot be so transformed, or refuses to be part of a divine consciousness, he will abandon without hesitation, but not from any preconceived prejudgment of its unfitness, or its incapacity to be an element of the new inner life. There can be no fixed mental test or principle for these things. He will therefore follow no unalterable rule, but accept or repel an activity of the mind according to his feeling, insight, or experience, until the greater power and light are there to turn their unerring scrutiny on all that is below, and choose or reject their material out of what the human evolution has prepared for the divine labor. How precisely, or by what stages, this progression and change will take place must depend on the form, need, and powers of the individual nature. In the spiritual domain, the essence is always one, but there is yet an infinite variety, and, at any rate in the integral yoga, the rigidity of a strict and precise mental rule is seldom applicable, for even when they walk in the same direction, no two natures proceed on exactly the same lines, in the same series of steps, or with quite identical stages of their progress. It may yet be said that a logical succession of the states of progress would be very much in this order. First, there is a large turning in which all the natural mental activities proper to the individual nature are taken up or referred to a higher standpoint and dedicated by the soul in us, the psychic being, the priest of the sacrifice, to the divine service. Next, there is an attempt at an ascent of the being and a bringing down of the light and power proper to some new height of consciousness gained by its upward effort into the whole action of the knowledge. Here, there may be a strong concentration on the inward central change of the consciousness, and an abandonment of a large part of the outward-going mental life, or else its relegation to a small and subordinate place. At different stages, it, or parts of it, may be taken up again from time to time to see how far the new inner psychic and spiritual consciousness can be brought into its movements. But that compulsion of the temperament, or the nature, which in human beings necessitates one kind of activity or another, and makes it seem almost an indispensable portion of the existence, will diminish, and eventually no attachment will be left, no lower compulsion or driving force felt anywhere. Only the divine will matter. The divine alone will be the one need of the whole being. If there is any compulsion to activity, it will be not that of implanted desire or of force of nature, but the luminous driving of some greater consciousness force, which is becoming more and more the sole motive power of the whole existence. On the other hand, it is possible, at any period of the inner spiritual progress, that one may experience an extension, rather than a restriction, of the activities. There may be an opening of new capacities of mental creation and new provinces of knowledge by the miraculous touch of the yoga shakti. Aesthetic feeling, the power of artistic creation in one field or many fields together, talent or genius of literary expression, a faculty of metaphysical thinking, any power of eye or ear or hand or mind power may awaken where none was apparent before. The divine within may throw these latent riches out from the depths in which they were hidden, or a force from above may pour down its energies to equip the instrumental nature for the activity or the creation of which it is meant to be a channel or a builder. But whatever may be the method or the course of development chosen by the hidden master of the yoga, the common culmination of this stage is the growing consciousness of him alone as the mover, decider, shaper of all the movements of the mind and all the activities of knowledge. There are two signs of the transformation of the seeker's mind of knowledge and works of knowledge from the process of the ignorance to the process of a liberated consciousness, working partly, then wholly, in the light of the Spirit. There is first a central change of the consciousness and a growing direct experience, vision, feeling of the Supreme and the cosmic existence, the divine in itself and the divine in all things. The mind will be taken up into a growing preoccupation with this first and foremost, and will feel itself heightening, widening, into a more and more illumined means of expression of the one fundamental knowledge. But also the central consciousness, in its turn, will take up more and more the outer mental activities of knowledge, and turn them into a parcel of itself or an annexed province. It will infuse into them its more authentic movement and make a more and more spiritualized and illumined mind its instrument in these surface fields, its new conquest, as well as in its own deeper spiritual empire. And this will be the second sign, the sign of a certain completion and perfection that the divine himself has become the knower, and all the inner movements, including the activities of what was once a purely human mental action, have become his field of knowledge. There will be less and less individual choice, opinion, preference. less and less of intellectualization, mental weaving, cerebral galley slave labor. A light within will see all that has to be seen, know all that has to be known, develop, create, organize. It will be the inner knower who will do in the liberated and universalized mind of the individual the works of an all-comprehending knowledge. These two changes are the signs of a first effectuation in which the activities of the mental nature are lifted up, spiritualized, widened, universalized, liberated, led to a consciousness of their true purpose as an instrument of the divine creating and developing its manifestation in the temporal universe. But this cannot be the whole scope of the transformation, for it is not in these limits that the integral seeker can cease from his ascension or confine the widening of his nature. For, if it were so, knowledge would still remain a working of the mind, liberated, universalized, spiritualized, but still, as all mind must be, comparatively restricted, relative, imperfect in the very essence of its dynamism. It would reflect luminously great constructions of truth, but not move in the domain where truth is authentic, direct, sovereign, and native. There is an ascension still to be made from this height, by which the spiritualized mind will exceed itself and transmute into a supramental power of knowledge. Already in the process of spiritualization, it will have begun to pass out of the brilliant poverty of the human intellect. It will mount successively into the pure, broad reaches of a higher mind, and next into the gleaming belts of a still greater free intelligence illumined with a light from above. At this point, it will begin to feel more freely, admit with a less mixed response the radiant beginnings of an intuition, not illumined, but luminous in itself, true in itself, no longer entirely mental, and therefore subjected to the abundant intrusion of error. Here too is not an end, for it must rise beyond, into the very domain of that untruncated intuition, the first direct light from the self-awareness of essential being, and beyond it, attain that from which this light comes. For there is an overmind behind mind, a power more original and dynamic, which supports mind, sees it as a diminished radiation from itself, uses it as a transmitting belt passage downward, or an instrument for the creations of the ignorance. The last step of the ascension would be the surpassing of overmind itself, or its return into its own still greater origin, its conversion into the supramental light of the divine gnosis. For there, in the supramental light, is the seat of a divine truth consciousness that has native in it, as no other consciousness below it can have, the power to organize the works of a truth which is no longer tarnished by the shadow of the cosmic inconscience and ignorance. There to reach and thence to bring down a supramental dynamism that can transform the ignorance is the distant but imperative supreme goal of the integral yoga. As the light of each of these higher powers is turned upon the human activities of knowledge, any distinction of sacred and profane, human and divine, begins more and more to fade, until it is finally abolished as otios. For whatever is touched and thoroughly penetrated by the divine gnosis is transfigured and becomes a movement of its own light and power, free from the turbidity and limitations of the lower intelligence. It is not a separation of some activities, but a transformation of them all by the change of the informing consciousness that is the way of liberation, an ascent of the sacrifice of knowledge to a greater and ever greater light and force. All the works of mind and intellect must be first heightened and widened, then illumined, lifted into the domain of higher intelligence, afterwards translated into workings of a greater non-mental intuition. These again transformed into the dynamic outpourings of the overmind radiance. And those transfigured into the full light and sovereignty of the supramental gnosis. It is this that the evolution of consciousness in the world carries, prefigured but latent, in its seed and in the straining tense intention of its process. Nor can that process, that evolution, cease till it has evolved the instruments of a perfect, in place of its now imperfect, manifestation of the Spirit. If knowledge is the widest power of the consciousness, and its function is to free and illumine, yet love is the deepest and most intense, and its privilege is to be the key to the most profound and secret recesses of the divine mystery. Man, because he is a mental being, is prone to give the highest importance to the thinking mind and its reason and will and to its way of approach and effectuation of truth, and even he is inclined to hold that there is no other. The heart, with its emotions and incalculable movements, is to the eye of his intellect an obscure, uncertain, and often a perilous and misleading power which needs to be kept in control by the reason and the mental will and intelligence. And yet there is in the heart, or behind it, a profounder mystic light, which, if not what we call intuition, for that, though not of the mind, yet descends through the mind, has yet a direct touch upon truth, and is nearer to the divine than the human intellect in its pride of knowledge. According to the ancient teaching, the seat of the immanent divine, the hidden Purusha, is in the mystic heart, the secret heart cave, Hridaya Guhayam, as the Upanishads put it. And according to the experience of many yogins, it is from its depths that there comes the voice or the breath of the inner oracle. This ambiguity, these opposing appearances of depth and blindness, are created by the double character of the human emotive being. For there is in front in man a heart of vital emotion similar to the animals, if more variously developed. Its emotions are governed by egoistic passion, blind instinctive affections, and all the play of the life impulses with their imperfections, perversions, often sordid degradations. A heart besieged and given over to the lusts, desires, wraths, intense or fierce demands, or little greeds and mean pettinesses of an obscure and fallen life force, and debased by its slavery to any and every impulse. This mixture of the emotive heart and the sensational, hungering vital creates in man a false soul of desire. It is this that is the crude and dangerous element which the reason rightly distrusts and feels a need to control, even though the actual control, or rather coercion, it succeeds in establishing over our raw and insistent vital nature remains always very uncertain and deceptive. But the true soul of man is not there. It is in the true invisible heart, hidden in some luminous cave of the nature. There, under some infiltration of the divine light, is our soul, a silent inmost being of which few are even aware. For if all have a soul, few are conscious of their true soul or feel its direct impulse. There dwells the little spark of the divine, which supports the obscure mass of our nature, and around it grows the psychic being, the formed soul, or the real man within us. It is as this psychic being in him grows, and the movements of the heart reflect its divinations and impulsions, that man becomes more and more aware of his soul, ceases to be a superior animal, and awakening to glimpses of the Godhead within him, admits more and more its intimations of a deeper life and consciousness and an impulse towards things divine. It is one of the decisive moments of the integral yoga when this psychic being, liberated, brought out from the veil to the front, can pour the full flood of its divinations, seeings, and impulsions on the mind, life, and body of man, and begins to prepare the upbuilding of divinity in the earthly nature. Stopping at bottom of page 150, continued next week.